this morning. Chapter 9, the passing away of Bhishma Dev. Starting with text 6. 7 and 8, these verses are describing those who had come into the assembly from all over the universe. It says the Pandavas, along with Krishna, had come. Verse reads, just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, Bhishma, all of the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas, and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. So in the list, it doesn't give a list of kings, although we can assume that many kings, at least those remaining after the Kurukshetra battle were over, were present, but the sages, rishis, and those in the quality of goodness, they had come. Here's the list. All the sages like Parvat Muni, Narada, Domya, Vyasa, the incarnation of God, Brihad, Dashva, Bharadvaj, and Parashuram, and disciples, Vashishta, Indra, Pramada, Krita, Gritsamada, Asita, Kakshivan, Gautama, Atri, Kaushika, and Sudarshana were present. Quite an entourage. So Prabhupada dedicates a number of pages to giving some biographical information about these individuals. We'll do the same, a little description. My understanding when Prabhupada was doing this was that his audience was people from the Western world that didn't know any of who these personalities were. So he was just giving a little snapshot of biographical information, just for his general reading audience. And for his students and disciples, so that they would get something of an idea of these personalities and their, not just in this particular chapter, in the first canto, Prabhupada did like this, just to give his students a basic understanding of the Puranic descriptions of the histories of these persons. So we get something of the bigger picture. Because his intention was that the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita would be our principal scripture. So while giving attention to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we wouldn't have ready access to the vast Puranic information. So he selected out those things which were particularly useful for us. So first two on the list are Parvat Muni and Narada Muni. And in two successive paragraphs, Prabhupada describes them. Parvat Muni and Narada Muni were both Devarshis, or rishis amongst the devas. They're both so learned that they were giving wisdom to the demigods. So they're persons that worship the demigods for getting material benedictions. These are the persons that advise those demigods. And Parvat Muni and Narada Muni, there are many places where they would travel together. They were like close in friendship with one another. For example, when Narada went for the second time to visit Murghari, the hunter, he was with Parvat Muni. And Parvat Muni remarked, "Wow, amazing what transformation that has taken place in this man who was a hunter. Now he doesn't even want to harm an ant." That's Parvat Muni. So both had this capacity that while singing the glories of the Lord, they could travel anywhere. That's pretty good. Imagine if you can pull out a musical instrument and just sing some song glorifying Krishna. Very powerful, extraordinary individuals. Narada is a direct son of Lord Brahma. Parvat Muni is mentioned in relation to the Swayambar ceremony of Draupadi. He's mentioned in relation to the all the Gandharva because of his capacity to sing very nicely. Sometimes he visited the royal assembly of Kuvera. So Parvat Muni got noticed, Narada Muni got noticed, and they came to this assembly. The passing of Grandfather Bhishma. Domya was present. Domya was the family priest of the Pandavas. He would regularly give them advice in so many circumstances of life. He was both proficient in rituals. He performed many sangskaras mentioned in Mahabharata, and also he imparted much advice. One prominent section is where he was advising them how they could remain incognito for that 1 year in exile. Domya was present during the for the funeral ceremony of those who had been killed in the Kurukshetra battle. He had been invited to the Pandavas in many, many circumstances. So very, very intimate associate. Who can give advice to the Pandavas? Domya. So he was present for Grandfather Bhishma's passing. Vyasadev was present. The biographical section on his life, it describes that he compiled the Vedas, he dictated Mahabharata while Ganesh wrote, and Ganesh agreed to do that as long as Vyasa didn't stop, and so he didn't stop, he just the whole thing spoke, Ganesh wrote. Vyasa was the son of Parashramuni and Satyavati, we mentioned yesterday. And as the son of Satyavati, it became very important when the two sons of Satyavati, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, both died before they had produced sons, which meant a really big problem. The really big problem was that the successor to the throne was not manifest. And Satyavati was in a lot of anxiety about that, being the queen and of royal position. She was quite concerned. Her husband had died, Santanu, shortly after the two boys were born. The two boys died shortly after they were placed on the throne. So she was in big anxiety. And at the time of Vichitravirya's death, both Ambika and Ambalika wanted to enter into the funeral pyre of their husband. So Satyavati made a strong argument that they, if they're at all dutiful in service to their husband, they wouldn't do that as a demonstration of their submission and duty to their husband, or attachment to their husband. They would accept Satyavati's proposal that as the queens of Vichitravirya, they would produce sons that would become heirs to the throne. They didn't like that idea at all. How could we cohabit with anyone other than our husband? And Satyavati explained that it's part of Vedic culture, just for circumstances like this. If the husband is unable to produce a son, the brother of the husband may produce a son. Now, that particular practice is prohibited in the age of Kali. One of the four things that are prohibited from the Puranas. But Satyavati invoked this idea. So, very reluctantly, they agreed. The only son of Satyavati that they knew of was Bhishma. So they didn't enter into the funeral pyre of their husband, Vichitravirya. And when Satyavati approached Bhishma, he gave her a flat no. She was arguing, well, look what's at stake. And he said, well, what you're asking me to do, look what's at stake. What's going to be the fruit of an act that is done for political expediency and not on the principle of virtue? What's going to be the fruit of such an act? I understand that there must be an heir to the throne. Politically, there must be an heir to the throne. And making some arrangement with a compromise of religious principle, I refuse. Oh, please, 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 I refuse. But I have another suggestion. Only you and I know this truth, but you have another son. That other son is Vyas. So he can produce children with Ambika and Ambalika. No difficulty. It maintains religious principle. And what a qualified father of the children. So the benediction that Satyavati had received from Vyas, who she hadn't seen since he was born, was that if she simply remembered him, he would at once come. So she remembered him, and then he at once came. Mahabharata described when he came, he looked terrible, because he was in the process of this extended austerity. So his body was emaciated and caked with mud and smelly, and his hair matted and frightening. Yes, Mother? You called? Oh, I have some very important service for you. What is it, Mother? Well, you have to produce children that will become the next generation of kings. Mother, the time isn't very good right now. I'm very unpresentable. If you could wait until after I've completed my austerities, it'll be much better. No, I can't do that. Because the plan of the Lord, who can say? My husband, untimely manner, he's gone. My two sons are untimely manner, they're gone. If we wait some time, who can say? If you will be around or they'll be around, it should happen right away. Mother, I don't advise it. But you are my mother if you insist. Yes, I insist. So, the Mahabharata describes the two Ambika and Ambalika were preparing themselves with the ladies-in-waiting to receive Bhishma as the sutra, the one that would produce children with them. And when, instead of Bhishma, Vyas came in the room, they didn't know what to do. Ambika closed her eyes. Vyas, leaving the chamber of Ambika, indicated to Satyavati, this woman closed her eyes, and so the son that will be born will be a highly virtuous person, but blind. Highly qualified person, but blind. So Satyavati could understand he won't be able to become the king. And so she called Vyas again, and please produce a child with Ambalika. Ambalika heard from Ambika what the story was. It's not going to be Bhishma, it's this other person. So when she saw Vyas, she paled. And so the child that was produced was Pandu, the father of the Pandavas. Most qualified son, but weak in his physical constitution. And then Satyavati requested Vyas one more time, because who knows, something may happen to Pandu. He said, okay, but that's it, no more. So, again, coming to Ambika's room, it wasn't Ambika, but her maid servant, who was not at all disturbed, and just respectfully received Vyas as the sage that he was, and Vidura, the son of Ishudrani, was born. So Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura were born as the sons of Vyas. So this is the biography about Vyas. Vyas, the biological father of the Kaurava kings, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. Of course, Vyas is most famous for his compiling of the Vedas and being the father of Shukadeva Goswami. So he personally came to the departure of Grandfather Bhishma. Brihadashva. There's very, very short description of Brihadashva. Says, an ancient sage who used to meet Maharaj Yudhisthira now and then. First time he met Yudhisthira was at Kamyavan Forest. And he narrated the history of Maharaj Nala. Now, several very well-known rishis Bhardwaj Rishi, Vishishta Rishi, Indra Pramada, Atri Muni. These are of the seven great sages. We read about the seven great sages in Bhagavad Gita. Oh, so here's three of them. Rudraj was the father of Drona. How Drona was born from Bhardwaj Muni is described here from the Puranas. Bhardwaj was going to take his bath in the Ganga and he saw a celestial maiden and he became attracted to her, and he discharged semen, and the semen was kept in a pot, and from that pot Drona was born. So Drona is understood as the son of Bharadraj Muni. Parashara Muni or Renuka Sutta, the son of Renuka, he was also present at the passing of Grandfather Bhishma. Parashuram, we discussed yesterday, he trained Bhishma in military skill. He fought with Bhishma, that's mentioned here. He fought with Bhishma to force Bhishma to marry Amba, but he was unable to defeat Bhishma. So at the end, he gave Bhishma the benediction he would be the greatest fighter on the earth. So, Parashuram's benediction. Parashuram also gave the skill of Dhanurved, or fighting, to Dronacharya at a time when Drona was, he was a Brahmana, the son of Bharadvaj. So Parashuram had this liberality with Brahmanas. So he gave all of his weapons and gave his the science of fighting to Drona, which Drona then later used in very fruitful ways. It was Grandfather Bhishma that gave consent for Drona to become the teacher of the royal family in military skill. You know that whole narration, yeah? Drona and Drupada went to school together. And they, from childhood, they grew up together as fast friends. Drupad told Drona, "When I grow up and I become a king, I'll take care of you. You be the Brahmana in my kingdom, and I'll be the king, and we'll be the best of friends." But when Drupad became king, he got, his disposition changed a little bit. He didn't want to give honor and respect to his dear friend Drona. And in fact, he insulted him. Insulted him. So Drona decided to protect the religious principles of my friend Drupad, I'll make an arrangement to get his kingdom from him. So his arrangement, his plan was, he went to go visit his brother-in-law Aruna's wife was Kripi, and Kripi's brother was Kripa. Kripa and Kripi were twins, brother sister. So Kripacharya was one of the priests in the royal family. So Drona went to see his brother-in-law and bringing his wife to meet her brother Kripa. And while one time when the boys were playing with the ball, just young boys, the ball fell into a well. He couldn't get the ball out of the well. So Drona came along, and because he was very intelligent, he understood how to get the ball from the well. He made a series of straws, and the straws pierced the ball, and he could lift the ball out of the well. They thought, wow, cool. He's really smart. So take him home and introduce him to them. So Drona sat with Bhishma and explained to Bhishma what he wanted to do. He wanted to train the children of the royal family in military skills, the same military skills that he learned from Parashuram. I'll teach the kids. And the condition is, when they grow up, I can take some dakshin from them. The dakshin is that I want them to do battle with Drona, with Drupad. Defeat him. Take the kingdom from him. And then I'll give half the kingdom back. So there was this get back mentality, which isn't good. So that's what happened when the kids grew up. The Pandavas said to the Kauravas, you go fight with them, see what you can do. The Kauravas got defeated by Drupad. But when the Pandavas fought, it was Arjuna alone. Arjuna alone defeated Drupada and brought Drupada to Drona, saying, here he is, dakshin taken care of. And Drona said, thank you very much. Now, Drupad, you're my friend. We grew up together. I now own your kingdom. I'm going to give you, just as you said, you take half the kingdom, and I'll take the other half of the kingdom. What do you think? Fair? So Drupad accepted half the kingdom. But he was in a get-back mentality too. So he arranged for a yajna whereby he would have a son that would kill Drona. And from that yajna, Drishtadyumna and Draupadi were both born from the sacrificial fire. Anyway, back to who was assembled at the Bhishma's passing. Parashuram Muni, Lord Parashuram was there. Bhardraj Muni was there. Vasishta, one of the seven great sages, was there. Vasishta is famous again and again for his Kamadhenu and people wanting his Kamadhenu and Vasishta roasting them if they tried to take his Kamadhenu. People got in lots of trouble. The eight Vasus, they got in trouble when they tried to take Kamadhenu Vasishta. Number of situations. Vishvamitra, so on. Ma, Rishi, who was one of the three sons of Gautama. Rishtamada, Asita. Prabhupada writes there was a king of the same name, Asita, but here in Asita mentioned is the Asita Deva, the Rishi, powerful sage. He explained to his father 1,500,000 verses from the Mahabharata. Whew. It was also one of the members of the snake sacrifice of Maharaj Janamejaya. Janamejaya wanted to destroy all snakes because his father was killed by a snake. So he wanted to kill all snakes. So he got sages together to make a big yagya to kill all the snakes in the planet. Shivan Atri Muni, again one of the seven great rishis. Kaushika and Sudarshana, the same, you know, Sudarshana Chakra. Prabhupada comments that in the Puranas, this is important to understand. The Puranas describe that the Sudarshan Chakra was a gift from Lord Agni to Lord Vishnu. But it's not like once upon a time Lord Vishnu didn't have Sudarshan. Some time passed and then, whoops, he's got Sudarshan as a gift from Agni. It was just an arrangement, a leela. Prabhupada gives the example. Like Krishna receiving Rukmini as his wife. They're eternal associates. There's a leela connected with Krishna's appearing and his marriage to Rukmini. But they're eternal associates. And so this gifting of Sudarshan by Agni, as is described in the Puranas, when you read such things, and from time to time such things come up, you know, like the appearance of the goddess of fortune from the churning of the milk ocean. Well, how's that? Because she's the eternal associate of Lord Vishnu, or Lord Narayan. So it's a leela. That's how we can understand these things. And a little bit more on this text 8, more some more who's who and the guest list. Many other sages, like Shukadeva Goswami and other purified souls, Kasyapa and Angi Rasa and others, all accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. So, some biographical information about Shukadeva Goswami. Probably we know more about Shukadeva Goswami than anybody else on the guest list, particularly his being the son of Vyas, his receiving the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyas, his speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. From Mahabharata, Shabdaparva, it is understood that he was also present in the royal assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira and in the fasting of Maharaj Parikshit. As a bona fide disciple of Sri Vyasadeva, he inquired from his father very extensively about religious principles and spiritual values, and his father also satisfied him by teaching him the yoga system by which one can attain the spiritual kingdom, the difference between fruitive work and empiric knowledge, the ways and means of attaining spiritual realization, the four ashrams, the sublime position of the personality of Godhead, the process of seeing him eye to eye, the bona fide candidate for receiving knowledge, the consideration of the five elements, the unique position of intelligence, the consciousness of the material nature and the living entity, and so on. So he was well equipped. In the Bhagavatam, we only hear he was instructed in the synopsis of Srimad Bhagavatam by his father. But elsewhere, we can understand he was thoroughly instructed by Vyas. And specifically, in this best of all literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. Kasyapa Muni, one of the Prajapatis, the son of Marichi, and one of the sons-in-law of Prajapati Daksha. When Prajapati Daksha produced 10,000 sons and 1,000 sons, and Narada converted them all into brahmacharis, Then Daksha produced daughters. The daughters were given in marriage to different rishis. And one of those rishis was Kashyapa. Kashyapa received a number of daughters of Daksha, so he was the son-in-law of Prajapati Daksha. He married 13 of Daksha's daughters. And their names are mentioned, Aditi and Diti, at the top of the list. And from these, Kashyapa produced, this is in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, many of the varieties of species. So this is our Vedic explanation, or Bhagavatam explanation, of how varieties of species came. It wasn't Darwinian evolution. Gradual successive changes of mutation over a period of time. It was Kashyapa and wives of Daksha. Kuta has explained in a very interesting way. There's like this human devolution. Recently, Dhrutakarma was on tour here in India, lecturing on human devolution. For forbidden archaeology, one, human devolution, the other. So in human devolution, the picture is that that Lord Brahma and the Prajapatis have a bigger gene pool, something like that. And just like, you know, someone that has blue eyes, you know this from eighth grade science. There's brown, the gene for brown eyes and blue eyes and green eyes. So the dominant one is brown. If brown is there, brown will show. But if there is too blue or too green, then it'll come out green. So it depends on the gene pool of the mother and father, what's going to be the color of the eyes of the child. So that's eighth grade science. Vedic science says that the capacity of higher beings is they have a much bigger gene pool. And so they can produce this or that or that or this or that. And that's their facility as Prajapatis. And so they populate the planet as part of the service to the Lord with a very high qualification. Kashyapa had a high qualification spiritually. And so he served the Lord in that way. That's our Vedic explanation. Angirasa, the last on this list, was the son of Maharshi Angira. And he's the same as Brihaspati, the chief priest of the demigods. So, just to end this, who's who, the chief priest of the demigods came all the way from the heavenly planets to this earth planet to observe the departure of grandfather Bhishma. So, Bhishma Dev, the next verse describes that Bhishma Dev received everybody. Now normally when you receive people, you get up and you smile and you greet them and you make arrangements. But his body's riddled with arrows. So the verse says, he perfectly satisfied all of his guests because he knew the art of Vaishnava etiquette according to time, place, and circumstance. So according to the circumstance, he wasn't able to get up and do anything. But his manner, aside from what his bodily limitations were, his manner of receiving was so gracious, everyone was fully satisfied. Fully satisfied. So it's not just what you do that makes people satisfied. So, We know that the standards, when someone comes to visit you, this is one of the duties of a grihastha, is to receive guests in the home. With home, one of the things the home is for is receiving guests. So grihasthas need to know the art of receiving guests. And there are some basic things that you should do. Prabhupada taught us again and again. You invite them in. You give them a place to stay, to sit, a sitting place. If you don't even have furniture, then it's a straw mat. And you give them some refreshment. If you're broke, you're poor, you don't have things, edibles to offer, then a glass of water and kind words. So a place to sit, refreshment, and kind words. What you do, it's how you do it that make people really feel welcome. Isn't it? You've all had the experience of going someplace and feeling uncomfortable and going someplace and feeling very comfortable. Bhishma Dev made everybody feel completely contented. Personalities from outer space came. And he couldn't move. But he spoke and emoted himself in such a way, they were perfectly satisfied. That's Grandfather Bhishma. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind, and by words. And Bhishma knew well how to use them in the proper place, and therefore there was no difficulty for him to receive all the guests, although physically unfit. Good. He wasn't whining and complaining and moaning and groaning and paining. He was, and they didn't come to, oh, just feel sorry. He received them very, very warmly, joyfully. They were fully satisfied. Next verse. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, yet he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishma Dev, and since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. So he received the guests and he worshipped Krishna. And that's appropriate. We respect everyone and we worship Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Now, Bhishma Dev, as we know from Rajasuya Yajna particularly and other places, he knew Krishna's position. From the previous chapter, we discussed one other time the prayers of Queen Kunti. Kunti also understood Krishna's position. She understood that Krishna was not different than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original source of all creation, and he was situated in the heart of all living beings. It's the first of Kunti's prayers. Kunti knew it, and Bhishma Dev knew it. Kunti was bewildered by it. Bhishma Dev's not bewildered by it. Bhishma Dev's perfectly clear. Now imagine if you had such an understanding that the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord within the heart of every living being, is standing right before you. Wow. And he worshipped him, lying on his bed of arrows. He worshipped him. Now he worshipped him with the restricted time, place, circumstance. Physically he couldn't exactly do the same thing that he would do if he was fit and hearty. But within his limitations, he worshipped Krishna. Text 11. The sons of Maharaj, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. Now, this is the sign of a great personality. There's many things. He's not thinking about himself. A great personality is thinking about the welfare of others. It's a sign of a great personality. Here's Bhishma, whose body is shot through with arrows. Who knows how many arrows? So many arrows that his body wasn't even touching the ground. He was just resting on the arrows. That's a lot of arrows through both sides of his body. That's painful. You get a little pin or a thorn. So he's in such pain, but he's thinking about the suffering of others. And as he's thinking about the suffering of others, he's tears of ecstatic joy are coming to him, thinking about how dear they are to Krishna. So in the purport, Prabhupada discusses, Bhishma knew very, very well, as Vidura knew very well, all the intrigue, all the nasty, terrible stuff that Duryodhan and company were up to. He knew it perfectly well. And he felt such protectiveness, as Vidura also felt protectiveness toward the Pandavas. When Pandu died, there was this curse. Pandu had a curse because he had fired an arrow, and it was two deer, and it turns out it wasn't just two deer, it was yogi and yogini, and they were assuming that form, and he injured them. He was cursed. When he would be engaged at any point in his life by being engaged in union with female, he would die. So that happened. He died in that way. So the Pandavas who were with their father, Madri entered into the funeral pyre of Pandu, and Kunti with her five young boys who were although they were the sons of the king, they were living in the forest because Pandu just liked being in the forest more than he liked being in the palace. They came back, but they had no father. So Bhishma, who is not a grihastha but a brahmachari, he acted like their father. So as the Pandavas grew up, he was their father, surrogate father, or grandfather, Bhishma. He had such affection for the Pandavas. So he knew of their difficulty, the difficulty that they had, and that Kunti had because of their being unprotected and different circumstances of life. So much Prabhupada writes. Bhishma Dev remembered the great tribulation suffered by his most pious grandsons. So just seeing the Pandavas in this condition that he was in, he was appreciating the difficulties that they had undergone, the tribulations that they had undergone. So what we're going to be discussing after breakfast,
is how Bhishma Dev advises the Pandavas, which means how the Bhagavatam is advising us to see the tribulations of life. A very, very valuable instruction, because if you hadn't noticed, there's tribulations in life. And you don't ask for them, but they just come in the door and make themselves at home. Take over. Rule the place like we're in charge. So, how do you deal with that situation? Tribulations of life. So, again, when Bhishma saw the Pandavas, he could understand how heavy their hearts were over the whole situation of the Kurukshetra battle. Particularly Yudhisthira. Because Yudhisthira was feeling, I'm responsible for the death of so many people. Just so that I can become king, so many people have sacrificed their lives. It was the same argument that Arjuna was giving before the Kurukshetra battle. Yudhisthira was thinking after the Kurukshetra battle. So many wives are now without husbands. So many children are now without fathers. So many persons are now without their protectors. And why? So that I can become king. So many persons tried to pacify Grandfather Bhishma. So many persons tried to pacify Yudhisthira, and no one could pacify him. Even Krishna could not pacify Yudhisthira, just so that Bhishma could pacify Yudhisthira. Just see, he's greater than I am. That was Krishna's wish, to demonstrate like that, or honor his devotee in that way. That's Krishna. So after the Pandavas came back, Bhishma accepted a role like their father. And they were very, very, very powerful. I don't know if we should go into the whole detail of each of the tribulations, the poison tribulation, and the arson tribulation, and the hiding after the arson tribulation, marriage of Draupadi, Swayamvar situation. They're coming back with Draupadi as their queen. Again, treated very badly. Anyway, so it's nice to go through those Mahabharat narrations. But I don't know if I'll do that right now, because it's 9 o'clock. And what will it take for the translation? What time should I end? Okay. I'll do a little bit. When the boys came back, the initial mood, when the Pandavas, the sons of Pandu, came back into the royal family, because Pandu was the king, everyone respected them as the successors to the throne. In fact, the sons of Dhritarashtra and Dhritarashtra himself treated them very kindly. But the Pandavas were so good and powerful and amazing, it inspired envy in the hearts of the other boys, especially Duryodhana. When the boys would play games together, you know, Bhima would just like toss the other kids all over the place, just playfully. And Duryodhana couldn't stand it. It was too humiliating, because he had pride in his heart. It finally got to the point where he started thinking, I want to get rid of Bhima. So he made a proposal to his father. I want to kill him. Please give your permission. And Dhritarashtra strenuously objected. How is this possible? My brother, Pandu, cared for me when I was blind. He cared for me like my dearmost friend as we were growing up. He cared for me so affectionately. How could I turn around and now in his absence kill one of his sons? You can't, don't make such a proposal. Please stop. But Duryodhan knew how to ply the weak heart of his father and kept needling and needling. I can't take it. This is too much. If you want to lose me as your son, then deny me this privilege. But it'll be very neat and simple. We'll just poison him. The weak-hearted Dhritarashtra fell silent. And Duryodhan knew he had him. So he got a conspirator in the plan, and the plan was there was a large residential summer house where the royal family would go and conduct activities together sometimes. So the young boys, the plan was they would have an outing and they would sport together, wrestle together, swim together, play water sports together, and have a big feast and come back. At the big feasting, they gave enough poison to kill 10 men in the plate of beam. He just ate the thing like it was nothing. And then there are water sporting activities, throwing everybody like, you know, unlimitedly powerful. But at the end of the day, Bhima was feeling a little tired. He said, I'm just going to rest by the side of the river here and I'll meet up with you later. So while he was resting, he was tied up very tightly in ropes and tossed in the river. And he finished. Because the ropes were so tightly bound, Bhima couldn't get free, but the Naga princesses saw Bhima and drew him down, down, down into the realm of the Nagas. And when the Nagas, the serpents, bit Bhima, the poison from the serpents neutralized the poison, and so he lived. And Bhima expanded his body and burst the ropes. The Nagas thought, whoa. We better get Vasuki and find out what to do. So they went to Vasuki, and Vasuki with Arka, his chief. Vasuki was the king, and Arka was one of the chief ministers in the Naga Loka. They came disguised as humans. It could change serpent forms to human forms. They came before Bhima, and Arka immediately recognized Bhima, because 2 generations ago he was the grandfather of Kunti, and he recognized Kunti's son, Bhima. Hey, Bhima, what you doing here? This is Nagaloka. And Vasuki explained, because the Nagas have the capacity to understand events beyond immediate space, they can understand what was the plan of Duryodhan to poison and kill Bhima. But now you've been rescued. And Vasuki said, Arka, what do you think is a fitting way that we can honor our very special guest? And, well, I think the way we can honor him is we can provide him with our special rasa. This special rasa, just one pot of this special rasa gives one the strength of 1,000 elephants. So they didn't know what capacity Bhima has for eating. He gulped down 8 complete pots. They had never seen anything like that before. And after taking this rasa, Bhima said, I think I need some rest. He rested a long time because it was powerful stuff. When he awoke, he had the strength of 10,000 elephants. And this strength capacity stayed with him thereafter. They then dressed him in their royal style of Nagaland. And then they informed Bhima that your family members are getting greatly anxious about your well-being. So we're very happy to have you here, but for their peace of mind, best if you return. But beware of Duryodhan. So meanwhile, back in Hastinapur, the Pandavas returned, just expecting, they thought maybe Bhima had gone ahead of them, but Bhima didn't show up, and Bhima didn't show up, and Bhima didn't show up. So Kunti was in great anxiety. So what did Kunti do? She went to Vidura. Uncle Vidura, what to do? Bhima's not come. And Vidura very simply said, Vyas told us that your sons are invincible. And just believing in the words of Vyas, Kunti, set aside your concern. Wherever he is, he's under the protection of Vyas and the personality of Godhead. With that, her anxiety was gone. Very instructive. Just the words of a saintly person, Vyasadeva, was enough to completely dispel such an anxiety. Her son was missing in action. Just hearing the words of Vidura about assurance from the words of Vyas, no anxiety. Anxiety was gone. And sure enough, Bhima came back and got all the brothers together, disclosed the whole thing. This is what Duryodhan tried to do. And Bhima, now with the strength of 10,000 elephants, wanted to bash Duryodhan. Just crumple him into little smithereens. Yudhishthir considered the situation and said, it's not a good idea. We've been away from the palace for a long time with our father. We've only recently come back. And whatever, if there was some conflict like this, there's so many allies of the sons of Dhritarashtra, it's not advisable to make a stand right now. Let's just be very, very careful, knowing the mentality of Duryodhan, what he's capable of. We'll just be very watchful. Don't say anything. So it was the poison plot. No, one of the poison plots. Later they tried to poison Bhima with poison cake. Completely ineffective. Then the arson plan. So the point that Bhishma is contemplating is that these tribulations, one after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next, after the seemingly an unending stream of difficulties that ordinary persons would never have survived. But these Pandavas, they're so dear to Krishna. that in every circumstance they were protected. So the dynamic is, the person who's about to die is thinking affectionately about the welfare of another, and to help the welfare of the other, who is thinking about those who are suffering on their account, the persons who no longer have fathers or husbands or protectors because of the battle on our account. He's turning it around the other way and saying, you had to endure so much difficulty, so much tribulation. An ordinary person should never have survived. But you survived. And how is it that you survived? The Lord protected you. How is it that you were put in the difficulty is also the same as how you survived. By the indications of the will of providence. So, to be continued, how do we regard sufferings or tribulations or difficult circumstances when they come? And there's two categories. There's those who aren't devotees, and then there's perfectly qualified devotees. We're not in that category. Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadev, and Kunti, and Draupadi, they are perfectly qualified. So how is it that perfectly qualified souls are put into tribulation? How to understand that? And how to address yourself to the tribulations that come. So this is very, very practical instruction for all of us. Continued, hold it in suspense. So we'll continue with, because the next verse is, Bhishma then begins speaking. So it's an appropriate break. Text 12 we'll continue with. Any questions? One can do something that's religious for material or spiritual purpose. Correct? He's Bhishma Dev. He's Bhishma Dev. He knows when he sees Krishna, he sees the personality of Godhead. So he disclosed that in a number of places. This is how he sees Krishna. He's the personality of Godhead. Whatever he does, it's for pleasing Krishna. No, someone can do a religious act or an act of kindness or a service to another for the pleasure of Krishna. Is it not possible? Certainly it's possible. When it became known that Krishna was coming to visit the royal palace as a messenger of the Pandavas, a messenger of peace, Duryodhan just got angry. He said, who is this person? One doesn't even know what his birth is and how he was raised, and just started criticizing. When he comes, we should capture him and treat him like a criminal. Bind him and punish him. Bhishma blasted him. You have no idea who could... This is the personality of Godhead. You're just pipsqueak, you rascal. Your mentality is going to bring ruination to this dynasty. Just... Bhishmadev was heavy with Duryodhan. But he wouldn't act outside of religious principle. That's Bhishma. He's a great devotee. That's Bhishma. It's Bhishma. A great devotee can certainly make sacrifices for others. And it's not on the material platform. We know it is Bhishma because of his... So the criterion is what is one's regard for Krishna. That's like, you know, the delineation between the Sura and the Asura. Very simple. Devoted to Krishna. Disregard for Krishna.